If you look around your living room right now, you might actually see a little blinking green light on your home internet router.
Oh, yeah, the one everyone just ignores.
Right, exactly. Like most of the time, you probably don't even think about it. You just assume it's, quietly doing its job, connecting your TV to Netflix or your phone to the Wi-Fi.
Right.
But looking at the intelligence reports we are digging into this morning, there is a very real chance that that same mundane plastic box sitting on your shelf has already been conscripted into a global cyber war.
It's a really striking realization. I mean, we tend to view our personal electronics as these completely isolated tools, right?
Yeah.
But the reality of the network we've built is that a vulnerability in a home device is actually a vulnerability in national infrastructure.
Well, welcome to today's deep dive. I am incredibly glad you're joining us because today we are tearing into a really massive stack of tech news from the Tech and Morning June 11th, 2026 report.
It's a heavy one today.
It is. And our mission today isn't just to rattle off a list of disconnected headlines. We really want to unpack this single, frankly chaotic 24-hour news cycle to reveal the interconnected fragilities of our whole tech ecosystem.
Yeah, connecting the dots.
Exactly. I mean, we are diving into a brutal AI price war, some critical cyber threats, really severe economic turbulence, and a massive hardware shakeup.
And, my role here is to help make sense of all that for you. We need to look closely at the why and the how behind the what.
Right.
Because in a landscape that's moving this quickly, the goal is to make sure you walk away with actual, actionable insights rather than just feeling totally overwhelmed by a flood of data.
Totally. So let's jump right into the deep end with this bombshell Wall Street Journal report that dropped early this morning. OpenAI is aggressively slashing their API prices to fight their main rival, Anthropic.
Yeah, the numbers on this are wild.
They're staggering. Like Anthropic's annual recurring revenue, the reliable money they make every year from subscriptions and enterprise stuff, it's hit $47 billion. Right. That is nearly double OpenAI's $25 billion.
Which, I mean, that represents one of the most dramatic market share flips we have seen in modern tech history, especially when you consider OpenAI's initial first mover advantage.
Right, and it really comes down to raw performance. The report notes that Anthropic's flagship model, Claude Mythos 5, is currently beating OpenAI's GPT 5.5 on the SW Bench coding test.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
It is. For those of you not, living and breathing AI benchmarks, SWE Bench isn't just some simple multiple choice test. It actually feeds the AI real complex software engineering problems from GitHub and asks it to write code to fix actual
Like a
bugs.
real-world stress test.
Exactly. And Claude is scoring 84.7% compared to GPT's 78.3%. And here's the real kicker. Anthropic is doing this while pricing it cheaper. Like, they are charging $12 per million tokens compared to OpenAI's $15.
That pricing discrepancy right there, that's the pressure point. I mean, we are basically watching the transition of AI from a flashy consumer novelty into foundational enterprise infrastructure.
I look at this and I immediately think of, the 1990s telecom
Oh,
wars.
yeah, the fiber optic boom.
Right, you had these giant companies slashing prices to basically win the internet backbone, trying to become the utility everyone relied on, but they were hemorrhaging cash to do it, and a lot of them just spectacularly crashed. We know OpenAI is currently losing about $8.5 billion a year. Anthropic is losing $6.2 billion.
This is just massive burn rates.
Right. So with this price war escalating right before Anthropic's Q3 IPO and OpenAI's likely Q4 IPO, I mean, I have to ask you, is this a brilliant, calculated move to lock down market share or a desperate indicator that these business models are just fundamentally broken?
That is exactly the pivotal question investors are agonizing over right now. To understand the strategy, you kind of have to look at the mechanics of how these two companies built their models.
Okay.
So OpenAI, they really captured the early adopter market with ChatGPT, right? But consumer growth naturally plateaued around, 200 million users. Getting everyday people to pay $20 a month indefinitely is just difficult.
Right, subscription fatigue.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Anthropic, on the other hand, they kind of bypassed the consumer hype and laser-focused on B2B API integration. And they won over these highly regulated, risk-averse industries like banking and healthcare because of the underlying mechanism of their model, which they call constitutional AI.
Right, because a bank can't afford to have an AI hallucinate a financial regulation or leak sensitive data. They need to know exactly how the model is making decisions.
Precisely. Unlike older models that relied entirely on massive armies of human workers constantly correcting the AI to teach it what not to say.
Which is super inefficient.
Very. But constitutional AI gives the model a strict set of foundational principles, a constitution, basically during its training phase. So the AI uses those principles to grade and correct its own outputs before it ever even interacts with a user.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and it results in highly predictable, much safer responses. Anthropic paired this with transparent model cards detailing their safety testing protocols. In a corporate environment, predictable safety is way more valuable than a flashy, unpredictable chat interface.
So they basically offered a smarter coding assistant with rigid safety guardrails at a lower price point.
Exactly. So the enterprise money naturally followed the safety.
Okay, but if both these titans are locked in a race to the bottom on price, just bleeding billions, what is the practical takeaway for you, the developer or the startup founder listening to us right now?
Well, the immediate upside is phenomenal. I mean, this price war democratizes access to frontier intelligence. Mm-hmm. If you are a startup, the barrier to integrating world-class AI into your product just completely plummeted.
Right. It's cheaper than ever.
But you must actively manage your dependency. Aggressive, loss-leading pricing cannot last forever. If these companies continue to burn billions to capture the market, there's a very real risk of sudden vendor bankruptcy or, honestly, more likely, a quiet degradation in model quality as they try to reduce computing costs behind the scenes.
Oh, well, they'll just make the model dumber to save money.
Exactly. You need to build your software to be model agnostic, have fallback options so you are never entirely dependent on a single AI provider whose business model might suddenly force them to hike prices 500% post-IPO.
That makes a lot of sense. But building on that, democratizing this incredible coding power carries a really massive dark counterpart.
Yeah, it does.
Because cheaper, smarter AI that excels at the SW Bench coding test is fantastic for a legitimate startup. But it is equally fantastic for a bad actor trying to write complex, malicious code. Which brings us to a terrifying breaking point in cybersecurity today.
The June 2026 Microsoft Patch Tuesday report.
Yes. Microsoft just released a historic, frankly alarming update. We're looking at a record 206 separate vulnerabilities patched in a single month.
It's unprecedented.
Yeah, and these span everything from deep kernel-level system drivers to fundamental network protocols. But the terrifying element here isn't just the sheer volume. Three of these flaws are critical zero days.
Meaning the bad guys found them first.
Exactly. Their technical details and exploit methods were publicly disclosed on the internet before Microsoft even had a patch ready.
Finding three unpatched zero days actively circulating in the wild in a single month is, it's a security team's absolute nightmare. It basically means the shields are down and the blueprints to the castle are already in enemy hands.
Right. And we are talking about severe architectural flaws here. There's the yellow key BitLocker bypass created by the Nightmare Eclipse group. And there's a CVSS 9.8 HTTP SysSys flaw.
That 9.8 is brutal.
Yeah, I think we need to translate that for a second. The Common Vulnerability Scoring System, or CVSS, operates on a 10-point scale. A 9.8 essentially means an attacker doesn't even need a password, and they don't need any user interaction. They can just send a remote command over the internet and completely crash or take over a Windows server.
That's entirely accurate. And the mechanism behind that yellow key bypass is equally fascinating and just devastating.
Right, because BitLocker is supposed to encrypt your hard drive so that if your laptop gets stolen, the data is totally unreadable.
Exactly. But Nightmare Eclipse figured out a way to intercept the encryption keys physically. When a computer boots up, the security chip, the TPM, sends the decryption key to the main processor.
Okay.
Yellow Key uses a specialized, honestly very cheap piece of hardware to simply listen in on the microscopic electrical pathways between those two chips, stealing the key in plain text as it travels.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, once they have physical access to the machine, the encryption is completely circumvented in seconds.
And while IT departments are scrambling to deal with that, we're seeing state-sponsored actors moving with unprecedented automated speed. Like, our sources detail that the China-linked JDY botnet has just grown by 130% in the last few weeks.
Masses.
It has quietly infected over 1,500 small office and home office routers, literally the exact same internet-connected devices sitting in our listeners' living rooms.
And the mechanism of the JDY botnet is particularly insidious because it basically operates as a botnet as a service for advanced state-sponsored hacking groups like Volt Typhoon.
Wait, botnet as a service?
Yeah. It isn't just blindly attacking. It acts as a massive distributed high-performance scanning network. By routing their attacks through ordinary American home routers, state hackers disguise their geographic location. It makes their traffic look like normal domestic internet usage while they map out U.S. critical infrastructure.
Man, I'm looking at the timeline of all this, and I just see a catastrophic math problem. CISA, the U.S. Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, just issued an emergency directive requiring federal agencies to patch these critical Microsoft vulnerabilities within 72 hours.
Which is already a very tight window for the government.
Right. But the threat intelligence report says the JDY botnet, which is heavily utilizing AI tools to write its scanning scripts, can adapt to and begin scanning for newly disclosed vulnerabilities in under 6 hours.
Yeah.
So if the government is operating on a 72-hour ticking clock, but hostile state actors are weaponizing flaws in under 6 hours, mathematically, aren't we just guaranteed to lose this race? How can any normal business possibly stand a chance?
You are identifying the exact structural failure of modern cyber defense right now.
Yeah.
Human reaction times just can no longer compete with automated AI-driven exploitation.
We're just too slow.
We are losing the patching race. This is precisely why cybersecurity can no longer be treated as a, you know, a basement IT chore. It is a board-level strategic priority.
But if the math is that stacked against us, what is the actual practical defense?
The strategy has to shift from relying solely on patching to fundamentally reducing the attack surface. For you, the listener running a small business or just managing your home network, the immediate action is non-negotiable. Run your system updates today.
Right.
But beyond that, you must isolate vulnerable hardware. Put your smart thermostats, cameras, all those IoT devices on a completely separate guest Wi-Fi network so they cannot communicate with your main computers.
That's a great tip.
Log into your router, change the default administrator password, and explicitly disable any remote management features. You basically have to assume the perimeter will be breached and focus entirely on limiting the damage a hacker can do once they are inside.
It's just wild to realize that securing a smart doorbell is literally a matter of national security now.
It truly is.
But, you know, this kind of geopolitical tension doesn't just destabilize our digital networks. Cyber warfare is often the shadow of physical conflict, and that physical conflict directly disrupts global supply chains, which actually brings us out of the digital realm and directly into our wallets, leading into this morning's massive macroeconomic shock.
Oh, yeah. The new inflation data is certainly sending shockwaves through the markets today.
Right. So the U.S. Consumer Price Index, the CPI, has officially hit a 3-year high of 4.2% for May 2026. The Dow plummeted 334 points within minutes of the release.
Just an instant reaction.
Completely. Now, to really understand what's happening here, we have to look under the hood. The core CPI, which economists use because it strips out highly volatile things like food and energy, is actually holding relatively steady at 2.9%.
Meaning the underlying inflation isn't actually spiking.
Exactly. That means this massive spike in headline inflation is almost entirely driven by a 20.5% surge in oil prices. West Texas Intermediate crude is sitting at $94 a barrel, and that is directly tied to the escalating war tensions with Iran disrupting shipping routes.
It's a textbook example of how fragile the global energy supply chain is and how quickly physical conflict translates into a direct tax on the consumer.
Yep.
I mean, every single good that moves on a truck or a ship suddenly costs more to transport.
And looking at the political fallout in the morning reports, we saw former President Trump react to these numbers by telling reporters, "I love the inflation." He pointed out that these higher global oil prices actually create massive profit windfalls for domestic oil producers, which could potentially boost employment in the U.S. energy sector.
Right.
And I want to be incredibly clear to you listening. We are absolutely not taking a political stance on this statement. We are strictly presenting the reported political reaction to the data.
Because it's important to contrast that perspective with the broader consensus from economists right now.
Exactly. Because economists across the board are warning that this is a deeply dangerous economic environment. They argue that sustained high energy inflation could force the Federal Reserve to completely abandon its patient approach. We're looking at warnings of aggressive rate hikes, anywhere from 0.5% to 0.75% coming as early as July.
Which carries the severe, immediate risk of triggering a full-blown recession by early 2027.
I look at the Federal Reserve right now, and it really feels like they're trapped in this impossible trilemma.
How do you mean?
Well, I imagine it like a homeowner dealing with a massive plumbing leak that's flooding the house, but the only tool they have in their toolbox is a sledgehammer.
Okay, that's a vivid image.
Right. Interest rates are the sledgehammer. They can smash the walls to try and reach the pipes, causing massive damage to the economy, but they can't actually fix the geopolitical leak driving the oil prices. Like, they have absolutely no control over shipping lanes in the Middle East.
That analogy perfectly captures the structural bind central banks find themselves in.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Fed cannot drill more oil, and they cannot negotiate international peace treaties. They only control the cost of borrowing money.
Right.
The trilemma you mentioned is incredibly brutal. Option one, they swing the sledgehammer, fight the inflation with aggressive rate hikes, and risk putting millions out of work in a recession.
Ouch.
Right. Option two, they ignore the energy spike to protect jobs, but then they lose credibility and consumers begin to expect higher prices permanently, which creates a self-fulfilling cycle of inflation.
Also bad.
Very. And option three, they try to thread the needle with small, moderate hikes. This usually satisfies no one and leads to stagflation, which is a miserable economic state where everything is expensive, but the economy isn't growing.
Wow. So bringing this back to the tech landscape we've been discussing, I imagine a macroeconomic squeeze like this means venture capitalists are just slamming their checkbooks shut. Are we seeing tech funding completely dry up?
It is an immediate deep freeze. The data shows venture capital funding has dropped by 35% year over year in Q1 2026.
35%.
Yes. When the Federal Reserve raises interest rates, it increases the return investors can get on virtually risk-free assets, like government bonds. That raises the discount rate, meaning the massive future profits a tech startup promises in 10 years are suddenly worth a lot less today.
Ah, I see.
The era of growth at all costs that we saw in the early 2020s is officially dead. For any founders listening, your survival now hinges entirely on unit economics.
And just to clarify unit economics, that basically means looking at the profitability of a single product or service, right? Like, if it costs a startup more money in cloud computing power to generate an AI response than the customer is paying for that single query, they're fundamentally broken.
Exactly.
Making up for it in volume won't save them.
Right. Startups must prove they can turn a profit on every single transaction today, rather than promising profitability a decade from now.
And that economic reality changes consumer behavior, too. I mean, when capital dries up and inflation makes groceries and gas more expensive, businesses and everyday consumers suddenly have zero tolerance for wasting money on inefficient, disposable tech.
People want real value.
They demand hardware that delivers tangible, long-lasting value. And that shift sets the stage perfectly for our final two stories today. A massive leap forward in hardware efficiency contrasted against a highly controversial hardware betrayal.
Let's start with the leap forward at Computex 2026.
Yes, the unveiling of the NVIDIA RTX Spark. This announcement is genuinely staggering. NVIDIA introduced an ARM-based superchip specifically for Windows laptops.
It's a game changer.
It is. It combines a 20-core ARM Grace CPU with their Blackwell RTX GPU architecture. The benchmarks they are promising feel like science fiction. They're talking about 22 hours of battery life for normal productivity tasks, while simultaneously being able to deliver RTX 5070 level graphics performance for high-end gaming or 3D rendering.
Yeah, that's huge.
It's a direct, aggressive assault on the Intel by 86 monopoly that has controlled Windows PCs for decades, and it's a clear shot at Apple Silicon.
And to really appreciate the magnitude of this, we need to quickly look at why ARM architecture is so revolutionary here.
Okay.
Traditional Intel and AMD chips use by 86 architecture, which is incredibly powerful, but historically very power hungry.
Yeah.
Because it's designed to handle highly complex, bloated instructions.
Right.
ARM, on the other hand, which powers your smartphone, uses reduced instruction set computing. It breaks complex tasks down into simpler, smaller instructions that it can process incredibly quickly with minimal electrical power.
So it's way more efficient.
Extremely. Historically, ARM couldn't match by 86 in raw, heavy-duty computing. But NVIDIA has engineered a way to scale that low-power architecture up to desktop-class performance.
It's basically the holy grail for a Windows user. You get the all-day battery life of a MacBook, but you can still run heavy, graphics-intensive Windows applications and games.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the feeling of genuine innovation from NVIDIA is severely undercut by what we saw at Apple's WWDC today. Apple announced that their upcoming watchOS 27 software will drop support for 5 different Apple Watch models.
And people are not happy about it.
Not at all. That includes the Series 8, which is only 2 years old, and is literally still being sold as new inventory in some retail channels right now. Apple's justification is that their new on-device AI features things like conversational Siri and an AI workout buddy, strictly require the neural engine found in the newer S9 chip.
Which has, predictably, sparked massive outrage among their user base.
I mean, I have to echo that frustration. I can totally understand a creative professional happily paying $2,500 for a new NVIDIA ARM laptop. It represents a fundamental architectural revolution that physically enables things that were impossible last year.
Yeah.
But Apple is essentially bricking software updates on a two-year-old $400 watch. Like, yes, the S9 chip has a slightly faster neural engine for AI tasks, but does that really justify completely cutting off the S8 from all the other non-AI features of the new operating system?
It's tough pill to swallow.
It feels like Apple's massive marketing campaigns about environmental sustainability and reducing electronic waste are completely hypocritical when they are artificially enforcing obsolescence on perfectly capable hardware.
You're touching on a deep philosophical divide in how these companies approach their roadmaps. NVIDIA is playing a very deliberate, long-term game. They are publishing architectural roadmaps stretching out to 2028 because they need to build deep trust with creative professionals and developers.
They need people to believe in the platform.
Exactly. They need those users to believe that if they abandon Intel and switch to NVIDIA's ARM ecosystem, they won't be left behind. Apple, in this instance, is heavily leveraging their captive ecosystem.
They know you aren't going to just throw away your iPhone because you're mad about your watch.
Right. Apple's strategy is driven by an aggressive revenue replacement cycle. By locking compelling new AI features behind the latest silicon, they are trying to force a hardware upgrade supercycle in a market where smartwatch sales have otherwise basically plateaued.
That makes sense from a business standpoint, but it's risky.
The risk is severe. Rendering a device obsolete for software updates just 2 years after purchase aggressively burns long-term customer goodwill. So for the listener trying to navigate these hardware purchases, if you require serious portable computing power and battery life, it is absolutely worth holding off until the fall of 2026 to see the independent reviews of these RTX Spark laptops.
Good advice.
But regarding the Apple ecosystem, you must be incredibly cautious. Do not buy older, discounted Apple Watch models. Stick strictly to the Series 9, Series 10, or newer. Otherwise, you are paying for hardware that will be stranded without future security patches or app compatibility.
We have covered a massive amount of turbulent ground today. If we step back and look at the whole map of the tech landscape from this June 11th, 2026 report, we are clearly standing at a historic inflection point.
We really are.
We are gaining incredible democratized computing power, whether that's from the Anthropic and OpenAI price wars, putting frontier intelligence into the hands of startups, or NVIDIA putting supercomputer efficiency into a laptop.
But that same democratized power exposes us to unprecedented systemic vulnerabilities. We are navigating a landscape filled with critical zero-day exploits, state-sponsored AI botnets moving faster than human packing cycles, aggressive forced hardware obsolescence, and a highly volatile macroeconomic environment where inflation is just squeezing both corporate and consumer budgets.
So, pulling all this together, what is the ultimate takeaway for the person listening to this right now?
In an environment shifting this violently, adaptability is your only true defense. Standing still is the equivalent of falling behind. You must actively audit your AI vendor dependencies to ensure you aren't locked into a failing business model.
You have to ruthlessly patch your systems and physically isolate your vulnerable home networks. And you must protect your capital, focusing purely on sustainable unit economics against the backdrop of 4.2% inflation. You simply cannot trust that the terrain will remain stable tomorrow.
I think that sums up the mission perfectly. But before we wrap up today's deep dive, I want to leave you with one final, slightly provocative thought to mull over.
Okay, let's hear it.
We spent a lot of time today talking about AI getting cheaper and vastly better at writing code, while simultaneously we have hackers weaponizing vulnerabilities in under 6 hours using automated systems.
Right.
Think about the trajectory of those two facts colliding. If AI systems are now advanced enough to generate the complex kernel-level code that inadvertently creates these historic vulnerabilities in the first place, and state-sponsored botnets are using that same AI to instantly discover and exploit those flaws across the globe, how long until human cybersecurity teams are entirely obsolete? Right. How long before we are no longer defending our own networks, but instead sitting as mere bystanders in a fully autonomous, hyperspeed, machine-on-machine cyber war?
It is a deeply sobering realization. When the machines are writing the locks and simultaneously designing the keys to break them, human reaction times are removed from the equation entirely.
Exactly. When we started today, we talked about that blinking router in your living room and how we take the stability of our networks for granted. Today's reports prove that the map of our digital world isn't just shifting, it is actively rewriting itself faster than we can read it.
It certainly is.
Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive as we navigate the earthquake. Stay adaptable, isolate those smart devices, and we will see you next time.